Welcome to the podcast!
Come be part of the conversations that happen around my kitchen table.
He's John Brannion, and he's been a stand-up comic for more than 30 years.
She's Amanda McKinney, and she's been my daughter for her whole life.
Our family believes laughter is a gift from God. We often discover it while discussing culture, faith, and family.
So go ahead and pull up a chair, neighbor. Can I call you Carl? There's plenty of room here for you. Hey, oh, Carl.
I brought that down really fast. Hey, hang on.
Hey, Carl, thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us here. The Peach's headphones are broken. And
it's actually a pretty funny sight from over here. One is dangling by her shoulder.
Dangling down around her neck on one side. And as the music was playing, Luke was on his phone ordering new headphones. What a world. What a world we live in. What? Is it clicking and
is it shocking you?
Snapping? Oh, yeah. I don't know if I should be wearing these. I can hear like...
Her hair is smoking.
It sounds like there's like atoms crashing together right by my ear.
Yeah, don't get electrocuted for this
It
podcast.
Sounds like this. I can hear it.
Do you want to wear get some other headphones?
There's the Pikachu ones out there.
Oh, yeah, wait a minute.
Get the Pikachus.
No, you know what I'm hearing?
What?
It's their shooting game out there. Oh. It's because this one is on. This one's not in my head.
I was going to say. I didn't know that these.
No, they're shooting something in the other room, which I can hear because this ear of my headphones is off completely, and so I thought it was the wire going.
Yeah, back from, was it Shipshawana last night, opening for the Righteous Brothers. And here's the thing that I discovered, that when I slow down, in certain audiences of a certain age, when the audience reaches a certain
age. You can just
age,
say it, John.
When they get to be my age or older. Older people prefer a slower pace.
Okay.
Prefer a slower pace, which is counterintuitive to everything in me. All of my instincts are cut, move, get in, hit the punchline, move on, hit the punchline, move on. And it does, you know, it's okay, but it's much better when I slow down.
Was this
take some time?
This audience was not there for you, though.
Let it settle. No, they were there for the Righteous
Brothers. They had to get to know you and all that.
Correct.
So that might have led to partly.
That's part of it. But I'm telling you, I use a street joke sometimes to close. And the street joke far and away was the biggest laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it had a slower pace. And it was, I mean, it's genuinely a funny joke, but it was still, it's interesting. It's interesting because some of the training that you get when you are cutting your chops in, the comedy clubs is you got to keep moving, man. There's a certain number of laughs per minute you got to get to. And that's just not true for every audience. There are some places and times when you can be a little more conversational. You can be a little more laid back. And they actually relax. They respond better because they don't feel like they're getting hit with a fire hose, you know.
Mm-hmm. I prefer the pace of storytellers rather than quote, stand-up comics also, which I've said before. I don't necessarily like the format of...
She's an old soul.
She likes Ken Davis.
I like Ken Davis. I like anybody who's going to just tell a story and have it be funny. Sure. But, yeah, like it gets to the point to me where it feels like you're trying too hard. It's not that I can't follow it or that it's not, like, it's too rushed, because I can listen to Ben Shapiro and I don't have a hard time following
him. Right. But I'm not an especially rapid fire comedian anyway. I mean, I'm not rapid fire punchline after punchline after punchline. But what I'm saying is even at what I feel like is this fairly, you know, not lethargic, but I'm not rapid fire. But when I slow down even for that and just sort of take my time, everybody kind of relaxes a little bit.
Mandy doesn't like being manipulated or have somebody attempting to
That's all stand-up is. It's just manipulation. And
yeah, but there's when you're telling a story and you're weaving in humor and punchlines without it being jokey, without there being, you know, a clunky structure.
It feels like a dog and pony show. Like, it feels like a clown. If you're, if it's just manic and it's like, hey, everybody, look, watch. I think because I deal with preschoolers and they tend to like clowns because they're very easily distracted and you have to just use your whole body and all of the voices and all of the flashy lights and the bright colors just to keep them from, like, literally getting up and walking out of the room.
Well, there are some audiences where you have to do that.
Right.
That's my point.
Right.
There's some audiences where, yeah, you're constantly on the move and you're making noise and you're moving from one thing to the other because they just don't have an attention span.
Right.
But older audiences can listen to stuff and not get distracted. So.
Well, that's nice.
They didn't grow up with TikTok and Facebook Reels and YouTube Reels.
Part of it. They're not swiping. They're not used to swiping things that they are no longer interested in.
Mm-hmm. No, they focus on bringing their own attention back. I actually remember there was a speaker we had in high school once. Don't remember who it was, but he was a guy who came in and was giving us some lecture. And in the course of it, he said, he was talking about focus and attention during the actual lecture. And he said, you know, like, you guys are going to wander away, you know, at some point. You've already done it a few times as I've been up here talking, and you'll wander away again, but you're nice enough and you'll come back. And so he's like, I remember him saying that. And that's what's so ironic is that he was talking about losing focus, but by saying that, which was a very true and relatable thing,
it helped to focus.
It helped me remember for all these years, like, you know, however many years later.
I'll show him. I'm not wandering away.
Well, everybody,
I'm going to listen to every word he says.
Everybody else in the room laughed too because they recognized that, oh yeah, he knows that this is sort of somewhat outside of our control. We start to kind of space out and we think about breakfast and we, you know,
you
look out
sleepy.
The window and
breakfast.
Yeah. And then, but then it's like, oh, wait, I got to come back. And if you've never had the opportunity to be bored and you've never been forced to sit and listen to a 45 minute lecture,
if you've never had the opportunity to be bored,
well, then you wouldn't know how to do it.
Gifted with boredom.
Right. That was what we were talking about today. I said, a lot of teachers know this, but, you know, maybe some non-teachers don't. Children, students need a lack of stimulus. Like, they actually need you to make things hard. They need you to give them raw materials and not do too much for them and to kind of step back because that forces
them. They
need
to be bored, confused.
Yep. Frustrated. Yep.
Frustrated.
At the end of their rope even a few times so that they can either overcome that and then learn a new skill or quit and
or
learn
they can
the
quit.
Skill. They'll learn that didn't help, which I guess you're learning something either way. So,
well, I had a speaker, I heard a speaker a few years ago at one of the CCA conferences talking about how we need to embrace boredom. That was one of his talking points. You need to embrace boredom.
Yeah.
And some of you are not. You don't know how to handle having nothing to do, and you move from one stimulus to the next. You know, as soon as the movie's over, you put your headphones on, and as soon as you run off, oh, now what am I going to do? Now I got to watch TV, and I got to call somebody, and now I'm going to get on Facebook, and I'm going to swipe. And you always are constantly bombarding your senses because you're terrified that.
Did you bring that up because I was just on my phone just now?
Going to be bored. No.
Okay.
No, I thought you were ordering headphones, so
I was looking at headphones.
Leave you alone.
I just decided to turn on the do not disturb function on my phone because I think it might be contributing to the feedback we get on the podcast sometimes. I don't know. It may not be, but that was why I was looking at my phone.
It is Bluetooth. But anyway, embracing boredom was a concept that a lot of people never heard. So
can I bring up what I wanted to talk about today?
You can. Well, but I thought you said Luke had something that
I just
was
want to let
burning.
People know that Papa John's now has crispy cuppy ronies on their pizza.
Say it again.
Crispy cuppy ronies.
There you go.
They're pretty
We've
good.
We've been working on it all afternoon.
They're pretty good.
You usually have to say it at least twice before you get it quite right.
Crispy cuppy roni.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It's like, it's pepperoni that they just...
That's crispy.
It's crispy because cuppy. They let it...
I don't know how much more explicit you want him to be.
I guess that says it all, doesn't it? I guess there's nothing else to...
Pretty good.
...to reveal, yeah. If you like crispy pepperoni and if you like things that are shaped like cups, this is the thing for you.
Once you dab out the little grease bowls, you're good to go.
They are very greasy.
And we never get compensated for the things that we talk about.
Okay. Yep. This is a free ad.
That's true.
For Papa John's. No, we can talk about what I think Luke has been asking about this week. Luke and I have had marathon discussions of a certain...
How do we narrow it down? I feel like I've asked 100 questions.
We wouldn't be able to. But that's why I wanted to start with sort of my observation this week. The thing that I've been really thinking about this week, which is the limits of a podcast platform. Like, what is it? What is it that we can realistically do to help Carl? What is it that is just outside of our control? Because
yeah, we were working through how much detail are we going to give Carl about the amount of stress and anxiety that we've had about our podcast episodes?
I haven't had a lot of anxiety about the podcast itself, but I've actually made a connection this week with some podcasters who are on our network with us. And that helped clarify, like it helped kind of bring everything together for me because I was working on a concept until that moment and it finally made the connection. So this week, the boys on Cross Politic, the brothers, I guess. On
our bros. You're talking about Chocolate Knox and Toby and Gabe.
Yes. Who are legitimate friends of ours, like who would actually recognize us out in public.
Yes, they would.
But I bring this up because... legitimate. Even though we are friends and brothers in Christ, also we live in completely different states and run in completely different circles.
Yes.
And I think that needs to be mentioned because of what else I'm going to say here. Like,
yes.
As much as I consider them friends and as much as we enjoy each other's company very briefly during conferences and things like that, I cannot say that they are part of my circle. Like, right. My daily walk, you know, the journey through this life doesn't usually include them.
Because they're too far away.
Because they're too far away.
And yeah.
And I do listen.
If we live closer, then we would definitely be part of the...
Speaking right. Just for myself, Chocolate Knox is never far from my mind. Well, I'm always asking myself
okay.
What he would do.
Hold on to that thought.
What would David do?
Because that's relevant. Because I was going to say, we do consume the content. Like, we listen to Cross-Politic episodes, especially when they include people that we're really... big fans of,
right?
Like Andrew Klavan, for example.
I have been an Andrew Klavan fan for many years.
Long time. Yeah, because he wrote
his... In fact, before I was a Cross-Politic fan,
yep.
I was an Andrew Klavan fan.
You read his testimony of coming to Christ before...
I was an Andrew Klavan fan, I think even... Well, not before he became a Christian, but before I knew that he was a born-again Christian.
Right, because you were listening to his podcast and...
Well, I was a fan of Andrew Klavan before he was on the Daily Wire.
Yes. Even.
That's how long ago I knew about Andrew Klavan.
Right.
He was PJ Media and all of that.
That's what it was, PJ Media. Yeah. I couldn't remember what the name of it was.
Yep.
So yeah, he would write stuff and you were like, man, I really think this guy's funny.
He's funny and he's smart and I like him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, point is, we do listen to FLF content, not all of it, because you can't, but we are members of Canon Plus, and we, you know, listen to podcasts and things like that. So we keep somewhat informed about whatever controversies or dramas might be happening.
Yes, we are averse in the current drama.
Which is like every 6 weeks. Somebody in the comment section of YouTube is mad that the cross-politic brothers
guys have let them down.
Are not behaving the way a cross-politic brother should. They're not stepping
up and doing what's supposed to be done.
Right.
Their rowdy Christian status gets called into question.
Yeah,
you're like, supposed to be rowdy Christians, and here you are backing down.
Here you are not acting the way that you said that you act.
You didn't punch Andrew Klavan in the face.
Yeah, well, I don't intend to get into the specifics of all of the various dramas, but since we joined the network a couple of years ago, there have been at least 4 different rounds of you should have given that guy more grief than you did. And that causes me, not anxiety, but it does cause me to reflect and to think, okay, what happens if and when Carl, who's a loyal listener, a faithful, you know, podcast follower, is saying, you actually have to listen to me because I have been, I'm not just a troll. I've been here for all this time and I'm a brother and I'm coming to you as a close, right. You know, a close acquaintance.
As an insider.
Yeah. Like this is not just something you can ignore. You don't have the liberty to just ignore me here because I'm one of you.
I am one of you. Right.
That was when
this
I
This is
realized,
not that far-fetched, by the way, because that has happened many, many times. People
happened a few times.
Who would start emails with, I used to be a loyal fan.
Right.
And so.
Right. Yeah. And so I started thinking, like, they had a guy on this week after the Andrew Klavan incident, when I was already, that was already percolating in the back of my mind. Like, here we go again. We've got yet another instance where the listener thinks that he or she, you know, knows better than the podcast host that they have been following all of this time. But then they
Does it matter what they were talking about, or is that secondary?
It doesn't matter in this case that they were talking about universalism, because Klavan wasn't talking about universalism, and people who don't know.
Well, Andrew Klavan got in trouble for his remark that saying Jesus is king is anti-Semitic.
That's not why people were mad. They weren't mad.
Really?
Nope. They weren't mad that he was calling that a dog whistle. No, they were mad because he was saying that he's not worried about Ben Shapiro.
Oh, no. Yeah,
that was the main thrust of it. And now Toby comes out and he tries to explain where he was actually, like, what Klavan was referring to and how it's not actually universalism. He's just got an optimistic view of God's sovereignty. Mm-hmm. Hey, Calvinists, that's supposed to be your wheelhouse, but regardless.
That's what we commented about this afternoon. It's like, right. How's the Calvinist having a hard time with that?
Well, Toby was simply trying to explain his Klavan's position, not even saying that he agreed with it.
Right.
And saying, you know, this is what he means. And people are like, well, now even Toby's going soft because Klavan's a universalist and Toby is toying with universalism.
No. He broke Toby.
And listen, brother, we are just doing this for your good. We're just coming out here and telling you you're going soft and you're about to become a heretic because we know you.
That you may not even know about.
We, as your people who listen an hour a week, we know very well.
So, we know you.
So clearly, you can probably see where I'm going with this. We here in
this. I think they put out more content than an hour a week.
They do, but it's still not. It's not enough for you to actually be a literal member of their community.
The point is that we are on the network, and we actually have been on more than one occasion in the same room with all of those
You've
guys.
You've been on Cross Politics.
I've never been on Cross Politics.
You were on Water Break.
But I was on Water Break. Regularly. And I guess I was on Cross Politics.
A couple of times.
Yeah, a couple of times.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and even we don't consider ourselves, the way we use the term, part of the gang.
Right.
We are outsiders, right. Even though we're on the network and we're friends, and I have all of their cell phone numbers, and right. I could call them right now if I wanted to.
If we wanted to give them the what for, because they're being so kind.
If I wanted to call Toby and tell him he's going soft, right. I could do it.
If we wanted to warn him about his impending trip to hell, right. We could.
If I wanted to tell Gabe that he's sliding on the slippery slope, I could do it right now.
Right. But the point is, what you see, no matter how much content you consume from a podcaster, any podcaster, what you see barely scratches the surface. You have to understand that there is so much real life that's happening in the margins. That's how it's supposed to be. And, I know what I was going to say. The other thing that happened this week, they also interviewed a guy by the name of Dennis Allen. I'd never heard of this guy before they brought him on the show this week. And apparently he's like a business guy who works with jet planes and... But he was in the military before that, and then he's done all kinds of weird things. He said he's like a hodgepodge, like he's got the strangest resume ever of all the different things that he's done, because he worked in church organization too. Like he was some kind of a church leader.
Right.
So he's had this ministry, and then he's got that big business thing that he's doing. And he said they merge together a lot, where, you know, the way that we organize our churches and the way that we organize our families and the way that we organize our military, they all have some related, you know, have overlap. So
right.
He was talking about how to make disciples. And he said, it's very similar to the way that we make good leaders in the military, good commanding officers. And he said, there is no substitute for the amount of one-on-one apprentice style training that you do, because sermons have their place. You know, and lectures have their place, the classroom and books, and
podcasts.
He said that. Like what we're doing here, I wouldn't be doing if I didn't think it had its place. However, it's a limited place.
Right.
And you can't put people in front of a sermon 1 hour a week and have them walk away knowing how to be like Christ.
Right.
You also have to have somebody who's coming alongside them. And some of the language is kind of irritating, you know, meeting them where they're at. It's like, doing life together. But when he's describing it, because I have this a similar context to what he's talking about with my family, practicing these sorts of techniques, these discipleship techniques week in and week out. It actually made sense to me. And it made sense in a way that somebody who only listens to podcasts or only listens to sermons and never had a mentor wouldn't get. And it doesn't matter how many podcasts we record, and it doesn't matter, you know, how many conversations we share. There's something like, it's not going to make sense completely. And you're never going to be able to internalize it if you aren't also living in community with real relationships that you're able to apply the cross-politic policies with, you know, or apply the comedian next door policies
right.
to.
Well, and I think that one of the other things that we talked about, because we talked about this a little bit earlier this week, was the fact that if you are actually in a closer fellowship with those guys at Cross Politics, or Cross Politic, you would have the interaction is different, and you are less, I don't want to say that you're less critical or less confrontational. All of these words sounds like combat, but the dialogue, the dialogue is different when you're actually in community with the person. I hate to say it this way, but you're less judgmental and you're more gracious is the right word.
Yeah.
You give them the benefit of the doubt because you know them. You know that they're not really going soft, and you know that they believe what they've said they've believed all this time. And the fact that you don't, just because you're speaking now to Andrew Klavan and he's got a different perspective than right. you're right. willing to hear out what that perspective is. And because he's your friend, because they are friends. I mean, Andrew right. Klavan wouldn't go on Cross Politic if he didn't have a sort of a relationship with those guys, because Andrew's a, you know, he's not as big a deal as like maybe Matt Walsh would be, but he's on the Daily Wire for crying out loud.
Right.
So he's got a platform, he's got a following, but they're friends and they've said that multiple times. He's been on before and they've said it at the outset of this conversation. You know, this is our friend Andrew.
Right. Well, and the point that I was trying to make was to you earlier this week. The point I was trying to make was, we know that when you're talking to somebody who's a guest at your table, that the tone does shift.
It does.
That's actually to be expected. That's not a bad thing.
Right.
But if you've only ever consumed the conclusion of these conversations,
of the rowdy Christians,
if you only right. ever hear what they came to after weeks to months to years of thinking about these things, well, then you're going to be shocked when you have, like, that was a real life example. The first time when Klavan came on, that was a real time example of them figuring out, oh, we have this disagreement. We thought we were going to be talking about the Christ is King thing. We really ended up wandering into, does Klavan not believe that Paul's words are inspired? Or does he think that everybody's going to heaven? And like Toby, Gabe, and Knox didn't know the conversation was going to go in that direction either.
Right.
So you saw the real-time interaction that could have happened just as easily, you know, at a Sabbath dinner or something.
Over some crispy cuppy Ronies.
Over some pizza, yeah. Or
waiting for a way to slide that back into the conversation.
I'm so glad that he did. I didn't want Carl to think he had disappeared. He's still there.
We also didn't want Carl to think that we were just making up how impressed we were with the crispy cuppy Ronnie.
It's so fun to say.
He was literally dancing in the kitchen when
he
saw that was a promotional deal going on right now.
He could not have been happier.
But the point is that if you have only ever heard the theory of how to evangelize or how to have a Sabbath dinner or how to have a conversation with a friend, right. you're going to see it actually take place in front of your eyes. And you might say something like, hey, what's going on here?
Why are these people so angry at each other?
I was about to say, that happens all the time when people new to the Branyan
clan. No. I think you guys are misunderstanding what took place with this particular conversation. Oh. It was literally the opposite of that. You've got people consuming rowdy Christian content, expecting like guns to actually come out.
Right.
They wanted Klavan to be killed.
Taken down.
And they're like, come on, you talk a big game, and now you're not just going to punch him in the face. And it's like, look, first of all, they gave him a lot more pushback than what the average Christian would do with
their
friend.
That was you. they gave him a lot more pushback because they do understand each other, and he is a Christian. He is legitimately a brother, and so they talked to him like a brother, but they weren't rude, and they weren't.
Right, because there wasn't a reason to be. And that's the other thing. They have more context with Andrew Klavan. They have more of a shared worldview with Klavan than they have with the people in the comments. And I'm going to call them trolls, even though that offends them. I'm going to call them trolls precisely because it offends them.
Reformed trolls.
Because I'm a rowdy Christian. They don't like being categorized as trolls because they're like, I deserve better. And it's like, no, you deserve to be judged with the same judgment that you're using. But the men that were on that platform.
We've got a rowdy Christian here at the table.
The men that were on that platform.
Her face isn't even red. This is natural.
That's true. She's just, not even worked
I'm
up
not
right
worked.
Now.
I didn't think I sounded worked
you
hear, up.
You listen to her now, and she's not even fired up.
I'm not breaking a sweat. I'm just telling you what I came to realize this week. It's like, oh, those four men have a lot in common. They were disagreeing. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew they were disagreeing, but they were also doing it in a very healthy and productive way. And it was the people in the comments who were missing what was going on. Right. It was the critics specifically. There were a few people who were like, this was a good conversation. But like a good 75% of the comments were, you guys are doing something wrong here. And it's like, well, you know what? You just don't know what you're talking about.
They need to go watch the interview with Jeff Durbin and Toby, and I think maybe even James White interviewing that gay pastor.
I don't think Toby was in on that conversation.
He wasn't on that one? Okay.
No.
Well, they took off the kid gloves quick on that
but
one.
I don't want them to see
I know,
that.
I know, but
they
the difference is
that too much
the difference is they
like
recognized
that.
Him as not a brother, and so it was a different.
That's not the only difference. The other difference is that people who only ever watch Jeff Durbin and James White rip atheists apart do not know how to have a normal conversation with a Christian or anybody.
Or
they don't
with
know
an
how
atheist.
To have a normal conversation in real life. They know how atheist. To be keyboard warriors. Yeah. And that's important. Like, it's important if your only skills are the only place they translate are with extra likes on YouTube.
Here's what I think part of the issue is, or maybe the whole issue.
The whole issue?
Well.
Tell us.
Maybe maybe this is the whole issue. The way that the internet now has developed over these past decades is very sensational, and clickbait has gone from being, you know, hey, here's an offer you can't refuse, to everything is now clickbait. Everything, every bit of news, everything on the internet is made clickable. And even if you go and look at the Daily Wire, you know, which is a serious news source, or Breitbart, you know, these are news sources. They have headlines for stories like so-and-so owns this, you know, so gets destroyed. Somebody questions Jordan Peterson and instantly regrets it. And so that's how all of the conversations are supposed to take place. Somebody's supposed to get owned.
I agree.
And somebody is supposed to be destroyed.
Well, I would agree, but
and
I would say
not,
the whole issue is the fact that a lot of people, even Christians, have no context for real life conversations to recognize that is sensationalism.
Ooh, right, that's what I'm saying. That they think that every conversation is somebody gets owned.
Right.
Somebody gets
destroyed.
Why
do they think that? Because they never have real life conversations. They just watch Toby and Gabe and Chocolate Knox talk. And those guys are actual brothers. They literally spend loads of time together. They spend hours and hours sharing book recommendations, chatting about what they're thinking about. They have... This was what I brought up this
week. Well,
and
so do we.
Yes.
They have hours and hours of stuff that we don't record, Carl.
Right, and I don't think that we can understate how important that is. Like, that makes a big difference. And one thing that Toby said in the follow-up, after the heat and the, you guys were too nice to Andrew Klavan, Toby comes back.
He did not deserve that.
And he was describing how he had been relaying that Andrew Klavan conversation to his own family. So he's talking about it with his wife at home, right? I have some context for this. I know what it's like to be a podcaster who records a conversation, gets some pushback, and then goes and debriefs the conversation with the rest of the tribe, the real tribe, not the listener, but the people you know and love in real life. And so I'm picturing this with no trouble. They're having dinner and they're talking about what happened, and he's relaying Andrew's perspective. Now, he's not saying he agrees with it, but he even said, I was talking about it at home and I explained that Andrew has this category of people who are still saved by Jesus through grace alone, but may still not even realize that it was Jesus who did it.
Right.
They will be surprised to find themselves in heaven. So he's describing Andrew's perspective at home. And his teenage son says, oh, like the last battle?
Right.
Like C.S. Lewis? Okay, that is going to make, first of all, no sense to anybody who doesn't have that shared context. But I promise this is not the first time that that Toby and the rest of the Sumpters have talked about something that C.S. Lewis wrote.
Right. And we also know from reading and from the podcast and knowing these guys that they don't agree with absolutely everything that C.S. Lewis says.
Right.
They quote C.S. Lewis all the time because C.S. Lewis is a genius and he has a lot of insight. But they don't agree with everything that C.S. Lewis says.
It's not even that they disagree. It's just that the way the conversations happen is you put that stuff out on the table and then you ruminate and you keep thinking and you keep thinking. And then you compare your suspicions with real life situation number one. And then you have real life situation number two or three over here. Does that still hold water? Is my theory going to need to be adjusted a bit? Oh, here's a circumstance.
Right.
You know, babies who die before they've been able to repent and confess. What do we do with them? Well, Toby tried to bring that up on air, but he was talking to people who haven't already had similar conversations like that with him. And so they have not the right context to even receive what it is that the point he's making. But his kids, I find this interesting. His kids heard him say like two sentences and they were right there with him,
right,
ready to continue the conversation with, okay, do we still disagree with Clavin? Turns out, yes. But
at that point, at the first part, they weren't even necessarily evaluating whether they agreed or disagreed. They were just making sure everybody understood what everybody else was saying.
Which is what you have to do.
Right.
It's not a good thing for you to charge in with your guns blazing, whether they're literal guns or verbal ones, and just blow people out of the water. You can do that on a one-hour podcast when you're talking about some stupid Yahoo thing that an atheist said on the internet. But when you're having a real-life discussion with a person that you know, it looks different, and it should. And if this needs to be described for you, then it means you do not have enough of these real-life conversations in your own community. And there can be no way that I could... You know, we could record for another hour from here, another 4 hours from here, and I still would not be able to give you what it is that you're lacking.
Well, if your conversation with the people in your family is one person owning another person every time, then there's a problem. There's a problem in your family.
I think it's more like they don't have family at all. Like I do. I think it's more like people are on their phones all the time. And they literally don't even talk about, if they do talk to another person, it's about shallow.
It's about a video that they saw on their phone.
That would be fine too. That would actually be better if you're going to be talking about.
They don't
talk
about it. You just, here, look at this.
Yes.
And then they watch it. And
or
then
what are we going to eat tonight? I don't know. Where do you want to go? How much bread do we have? Like,
so what is stopping this fellowship in this community?
And what is
hindering people from having like, the Wilson clan's constant text messaging and the McKinney clan's constant
text messaging. It's hard. It requires
days.
I hate the word intentional,
days.
But it requires intentional. Yeah. It requires everybody going in. Well, at least it requires the people who are the leadership going in and going, this is going to be difficult. People are not going to show up. People are going to be angry. People are going to not know how to communicate. And you have to plod.
It's right. There's no short term. Like we didn't just decide one day that we were going to be a strong family, put everybody in a text message thread, and then off to the races we went.
That's what I was going to say. It's an understanding of what family is, and it's not something that you can just back out of for your little peace period and then jump back in.
But if I was going to boil it down to one thing, which you can't do.
You're full of a lot of these. Here's the one thing.
If I was going to boil it down to one thing, it requires... It requires
love.
Not giving up on the family.
Yeah,
not,
commitment.
Not taking yourself out of the family.
Isn't that where it started with us, Luke? If you think back to the very beginning of our relationship, even before we were married, when we were still dating, and we were trying to come up with what's the one thing that's going to characterize our relationship. And I said that, essentially. I said, I think that if we're going to be changing physically and emotionally and philosophically, if there's going to be phases of us that we can't even predict at this moment, mm-hmm. that we're going to have to be able to still somehow be married through all of that. I think that probably the only thing we can really hang our hat on is the decision that we're going to do it together no matter what.
Right.
It's just pure loyalty.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Stick That's it. Commitment.
It's just stubbornness. I'm not going anywhere. And it's not even because I don't have some reasons I could come up with for leaving. I'm just not doing it. And you make that decision at early, the beginning.
Yeah.
You make that decision going into it. It's like, we are going to stay, mom and dad are going to stay together no matter what.
Right.
And then everything else spins out of that. Everything else spills over to that. Now mom and dad can say to the kids, yeah, you kids are not going anywhere either.
Right.
No matter what you do, you are part of this family.
Well, and I actually kind of reverse thought about that. When we were first getting married, I thought to myself, well, parents do that all the time. They're given a baby. They've never met the child. And they just decide, I am the parent of this child. Like, this no matter what kid. I'm given, whether it's a sickly child or a healthy child or a smart child or a stubborn child, whatever it is, you accept what you've been given and then you make it work. And it's through the act of making it work that you become what we come to call affectionate or loving, or like
committing to it that you begin to see the benefits of it. And then all of a sudden, oh, I wouldn't even consider a job out of state and leaving extended family. And
But it starts with that first commitment and then days and days and days of continuing to renew that commitment in your own mind. But it takes, people don't like that. People don't like having to go.
No, everybody's a silo in America. We're our own islands. And we get together on holidays.
Right. And we do not tolerate being annoyed. We don't tolerate shoes that are too tight because they're uncomfortable. And we treat people the same way too. If people do not make us comfortable and happy constantly, then we pitch them and we go looking for somebody who will. And
but then people ask, like, they want to write to us, or they want to write to the Cross-Politic Boys, they want to write to, you know, Rachel Jankovic and Doug Wilson, and they want to say, well, here's my very, very, very specific
special situation that nobody else has.
Please speak into it. And I'm like, oh my goodness, the amount of conversation that we are having amongst our family members that they're not privy to, that, like, you can't even begin to describe to somebody who doesn't know. When Doug Wilson was the one who said, you know, we've got this big family text thread, and, you know, if one of the women is out shopping and they find a deal, hey, I'm picking up some of this stuff, does anybody else need some? Or somebody does see a video they think is funny, they share it with the whole family. Now it's an inside joke. Like, all of that stuff, I immediately knew what he was describing. Mm-hmm. But I also immediately knew there's a subset of people in the United States, and probably a growing one, that would have like 20 questions about that. Instead of taking it for the analogy that it was meant to be, or for the example of functioning healthfully that it was meant to be, and instead of going, okay, I know how to apply that, I've got a little bit of that in my own world, they immediately are confused and they have even more questions and even more skepticism about this whole community life thing. Like, they instead of making them feel encouraged, like I feel when I hear about it. It makes them feel
anxious.
Yeah, it makes them go, oh no, I have so much studying to do.
How do I do this? How do I immediately employ all of these tricks and tactics and procedures? Do you have about
15 people that I can put in text thread with me right now that I can, you know, send funny videos to? Yeah.
Well, it eventually gets back to a decision. Who are the people that you just are going to commit to? If you are not willing to commit to another person, well, that's the problem right there.
Right.
If you're not going to be part of a text thread, I'm going to stay in this text thread no matter what. No matter what sort of inane, crazy things get thrown at me, I am sticking in this text thread. If you're not willing to do that, if you're a person who leaves the thread because you don't like what other people are talking about, you don't like something, then you're not going to get what we're talking about
here. Right. You're also not going to get what we're talking about if you're finding yourself going back to where we said don't have fellowship with unbelievers, and now you're racking your brain trying to figure out how you can have fellowship, undying and permanently committed fellowship with, you know, your atheist
people who are not going the same
husband
direction
that you shouldn't have married in the first place.
Right. If you're like, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to stick with this person who doesn't have the same worldview as right. me, and we're going to be loyal and we're going to make it work.
We're going to yoke ourselves to the unbelievers exactly like you said not to do. It's funny because, again, if somebody else is talking about this, you know, on the What Have You podcast or the Bright Hearth podcast or whatever, when they share these same anecdotes, it just clicks for me. It immediately makes sense. I understand the benefit of their analogy and their example. I also understand the limits of it. So I know, oh, they mean that you should be committed to a good cause. You should be committed to the idea of community. You should be committed to truth. And goodness.
Right, because we didn't learn these things from them. Discovering them reaffirmed it.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, and if I
That's a great point. We didn't learn this stuff from podcasts.
No, and just today, I was talking to a guy at church. He's a guy who's kind of lonely, I think. He's got some marital issues. Does not have very many other people in his life besides, you know, the spouse with whom he has a sort of rocky relationship. And he wants to talk after church every week, and it doesn't even really matter what we're talking about. You know, he just kind of wants to be noticed and given some attention, some
community.
Affirmation. And what I said to him today was, the question that you asked is a decent one. It's the exact kind of conversation we might bring to the table at our after church lunches when all of my siblings and my parents and Luke's parents come over. And I said, living in community is a great way for you to get better at making some of these decisions or these calls. Because he wanted to know my opinion on a preacher. You know, here's a preacher. I'm not sure if he's a wolf or not. And I'm like, well, one of the things that living in community can do for you is it can give you a perspective on multiple ways that people might interpret that preacher. Right. So my sister might be able to listen to that sermon and take a couple of good things away from it, but it might be really bad kryptonite for my brother because of their unique ways of processing things.
Right.
But I'm not sure that it clicked what I was trying to say. Whereas somebody who already has 20 people in their family who regularly kind of butt heads about stuff.
Or three or four even.
They would know. They would go, yep, that totally makes sense. You can't just say this guy is good and this guy is bad because it completely depends on how it affects the various weaknesses and temptations and idols that all of these different members are, you know, dealing with. Same with kids. And when I'm giving parenting analogies, it's like, sometimes people will write afterwards and be like, I didn't quite understand what you meant. Or what did you do with such and such child afterwards? And would you recommend that for all children or just for your children? And it's like, holy cow, can I, like I can't even begin to answer that for right. you. Because, yeah, living in community will show you right. how different small-seeming variables can have, like, far-reaching consequences.
Well, like, taking away screen time from one of our children would not be a big deal. Taking away screen time from another one would be a huge blow.
Would be owning them.
And you have to know
right.
the own what they're like.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you can't... The other thing that gets missed when you're reading blogs or listening to our podcast is the... you were talking about a little bit earlier, Peach, that you're looking at the finished product. And the podcast is not usually a finished product, but it is a ways into the process sometimes.
We're not just shooting from the hip.
We're not shooting from the hip usually. Occasionally, you
we'll
know,
at least warn you. We literally have never thought about this.
I came into this podcast only thinking about Crispy Cuppy Pepperoni. That's all I had to bring.
That's pretty obvious.
So.
But it's also obvious that was
at Papa
not,
John's.
That was not the first time you had thought about it today.
But there is a
everything else is bonus for
there's
me.
A criticism that I get quite a bit, and that is that you think that everybody has to think the way you think, and you want everybody to use your words, and you think you're always right, and you're basically overconfident, you right. know, in your intellect is the way it gets put. You're so confident in your intellect, and right. and the reason it seems like that is because you're missing out on 90% of the rest of the conversation.
Well, I'm confident because I've already floated this past about 10 other people right. and it won. So the reason I'm able to forcefully say, here's a thing that I'm pretty sure about is because it's been tested in, you know, on at the table. It's been tested in the arena of real life. I've had other people go out and try to apply it themselves. They've reported back. And it's like, okay, this parenting technique seems to be pretty relevant to this day and age, you know, where we are right now, versus, oh, other people are hearing this advice on TikTok. And I think it's crap advice because right. we've talked about it and we've tried it in our own lives. I have the benefit of having a test kitchen, you know, in right. my own.
Yeah. Don't tell your house. Children. No, offer solutions. Offer
oh
solutions.
My gosh. I saw a video, oh, Carl.
You just did it, Luke.
Now our cheeks are going to get red.
Literally, we were just, this was last Sunday. It was Easter Sunday. Everybody was out. No, maybe it was 2 weeks ago because we were out playing disc golf and it was warm. And I was just scrolling. You men were throwing discs. The women came out and they were kind of watching, keeping eyes on the babies while they're running around. It was beautiful outside. I'm just scrolling on my phone and I found this video. I wasn't asking for it. It just threw itself in front of my face. And I'd seen the woman before though. And so I said, Tabby was standing right there and Megan too. And I said, hey guys, I know this is going to be a train wreck because I've seen, seen this woman's videos before. And she's got this crying toddler. He's not freaking out, but he's unhappy and he's right in front of her and she's face to face with him, just passively looking at him very calmly, lovingly, even just like, I love everything about your screaming right now. And she never says anything to him. There's no verbalization, but there's subtitles that are explaining her methods as she's like doing things. And she, it says, you know, offer support while she hugs him. Like he's screaming at her.
While he screams.
She gives him a hug. And then it's like, offer a solution. She hands him a sippy cup. He chucks the sippy cup across the room because he doesn't want that. Because his sin nature is in full force. And so then it's
did
like.
Did that solve it? Did throwing the sippy cup make him feel better?
No, but patience. That's the next thing. He said, don't lose patience. Keep lovingly staring at your rotten toddler. Keep doing that. And then it says, offer a second solution. This time she's giving him a blanket and a teddy bear. Mm-hmm. And eventually, after, you know, 15 minutes, the kid just runs out of steam.
Solution is actually a bribe, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what Tabby said.
Yeah.
She's standing right next to me and she goes, that's called a bribe. But like, how do you supplement that for somebody who doesn't have it? You can't. If you don't have a couple of sisters who are going to watch a terrible parenting video with you and, you know, kind of share their own reasons well, for why
you,
it's wrong.
Right. Can you imagine how any of the other girls would have responded if one of you sisters pulled something like that?
Well, now they would have been like, what? Are you okay? Like, yeah. What happened to you? But there was a time when Megan first had her first baby. Tabby didn't have any kids yet. Tim and Marla weren't married. Tabby and Joe weren't married. No kids besides just my two mm-hmm. oldest ones. And then Megan had the next baby. And she came over when she was still very, very small, when Piper was very small, and was like, I don't know what to do with this child. And so that was where it started. And it wasn't a single conversation. Right. If it were, then I could record that conversation and give it to Carl. And then
and
Carl
would solve
be
all
fine.
The problems for all the women
but,
everywhere.
But it
all
was
the, time.
The first conversation of many, many, many more where I said, keep in mind that your job is to train a child who's got a sin nature to be a servant of Christ. That is your goal. And so what's that going to look like? Well, every now and then they're going to rear their ugly heads. You know, their dragons are going to come out. And you have to think, is the world telling me the truth when they say a baby only cries when they need you to bribe them with something? Is that correct? Is it correct that the best way to love a crying child is always hugs and kisses and affirmation? Is that true? And she's like, I don't know. Like she didn't. She's like, that's why I'm here. And so,
that's why I'm here. Stop asking me questions.
We talked about it. And then after many years and many more babies came along, we are now able to collectively watch the same video in real time and go, ugh.
Oh, that's great. That's terrible. Horrible.
So did you bribe my sister with solutions when she came over?
I didn't give
just
her.
Gave her a sippy cup.
Yeah, I didn't give her any. Yeah. Suckers or anything like that. We didn't get to your thing, Luke.
My we didn't thing? Get to Luke's oh, thing. We also didn't get to talk about my plan to join the Professional Slap Fighters League.
Oh, gosh. Until next time, Carl.
Do you want to say something about pepperoni one more time?
not pepperoni. Crispy cuppy-ronies.
thanks for visiting the Comedian's House. If you want to spend more time with our family, you can follow John Branion on YouTube and Facebook. Also email nextdoor@johnbranion.com with your comments and questions. We'll see you next time.